Good afternoon and welcome to the session on operating experience data applications and risk modeling. My name is Felix Gonzalez. I am the branch chief of the performance and reliability branch in the Office of Nuclear Regulatory Research of the USNRC. Today we have a very distinguished panel member with us. First, we're going to have Sean Saint-Germain from the Idaho National Laboratory. We have Jeff Bittman from the USNRC. We have Greg Krueger from the Nuclear Energy Institute. And we also have Dr. James Chang from the USNRC. Today's session, we'll discuss the NRC data collection activities and databases. Specifically, we're going to be focused on using as example the common cause failure applications in risk modeling, risk-informed decision-making, and we'll also discuss current activities related to common cause failure. The session will also discuss the Cicada tool for operator training and human reliability analysis. This session, I consider a complement and a follow-up to last year's RIC session titled The A2C of Operating Experience Data Collection Activities, Collection Usage to Improve PRA Realism, which discussed more in detail the NRC's and industry data collection activities. Its presentations and recordings can be downloaded off the NRC's RIC 2018 public website. Before we start, I want to mention a few administrative items, and I apologize because I know this is not the first time that you're going to hear it. It will not be the last unless you came to the RIC just to hear this session, in which case I feel truly honored. Thank you. It was a joke. Hopefully. First, your feedback is very important to us. There are three ways that you can submit feedback on the session or the RIC in general. One is using the app. Hopefully you have been able to get yourself familiarized with the app and download it and use it. I've heard very good things about it. Myself consider it very useful. Using the kiosk next to the registration desk. And the other way is to access the link in the RIC public website. There are four presentations that should take about 1 hour to go through, leaving about 25, 30 minutes for the questions and answers. During the Q&A answers, there's two ways that participants and attendees can ask questions. One is we have the room monitors going around the room. You can deliver written questions to them and we'll read them. The other way is feel free to walk through the microphones and ask your questions. So with that, we're going to proceed to the first presentation. The first presenter is going to be Mr. Sean Saint-Germain. He's a principal investigator in the Risk Assessment Management Services Department at the Idaho National Laboratory. He is currently the principal investigator for the NRC project titled Operating Experience for Risk Applications and Cicada Operations, and also for a project in the Department of Energy Light Water Reactor Sustainability Project titled Audit Risk Management Improvement. Sean was previously an SRO certified shift technical advisor and a shift support supervisor at Columbia Generating Station. He holds a master's degree in nuclear engineering from the University of Idaho, a master's in business administration from City University of Seattle, and a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering from Michigan Technological University. His presentation is titled Operating Experience Data to Support Common Cause Failure Modeling. So please join me in welcoming Mr. Sean Saint-Germain. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you guys toughing it out to the end of the first long day. So in this presentation, we're going to look at the sources of data that support common cause failure modeling. We're going to look at the ways in which we process that data. We're going to look at some of the tools that are available for PRA professionals to access this data and some of the reports that are available as well. So the primary sources of data that we use in the common cause failure modeling come from licensee event reports. Those are required by 5073 to be reported by the licensees. And particularly in this case, we're looking at tech spec violations or safety system functional failure reports. The other major source of data then would be the Institute for Nuclear Power Operations, or IMPO, ISIS database. That's the consolidated events database formerly known as EPICS. So if you look in some of our older new regs or reports, you'll see reported as or referred to as EPICS. This data is reported by each licensee to IMPO, and it supports the maintenance rule and MSPI programs. The data is proprietary and only available to IMPO members. The amount of data varies a little bit depending on the licensee's efforts. Some put in quite a bit more, but there is a lot of data in there. And it does include demand and runtime data for many of the systems, which is key for our parameter estimate calculations. So how do we identify these common cause failure events? So we look through the each licensee event report, and we've identified the components of interest in the ISIS database. We then read those for failure events. Sometimes in those event reports, the CCF events are explicitly called out. So that could happen if there was simultaneous failures reported in the event, or after the first independent failure was noticed, the plant does an extensive condition evaluation and determines that the redundant components could have also suffered the same failure mechanism. So that's the easier way of identifying common cause failure events. The more difficult way is looking at our independent failures and trying to find if there happened to have been a unreported or unidentified common cause. And the way we do that is our software can sort all of our independent failure events by docket, system, component, failure mode, and then calculates a delta time between those failure records. And then we look at the delta time, and if it's in a close enough proximity, we read both of the events and see if that truly was a potential common cause failure event. I'm not sure if you can read that. I wasn't sure how well this was going to show up, but in this case, there was a circ water strainer that have had two events within 10 days of each other that turned out to be due to the same cause. So once we read the failure records, we need to create our own failure record. The failure records that we're using as the source weren't necessarily written as PRA failures, so we need to convert the failure mode, for example, from maybe it was fail to operate into something that we use in PRA space, like fail to start or fail to run. So we capture this sort of data here in our failure records in our database. In this case, there was two failures of emergency diesel generator that had the same cause. So from that information, we create a common cause failure record, which captures the pertinent information related to the common cause failure modeling that we'll be using. So this additional information goes into the database, and then we periodically will create reports based on this data. So the most recent report that's published on the NRC website is the 2015 CCF parameter estimate report. So this includes data that goes from 1997 through 2015. The report was published in October of 2016. It provides CCF estimates for 188 combinations of systems, components, and failure modes. So total in the database, there were 437 CCF records out of a total of about 12,000 independent records. Now you can see that if you take 437 records and try and put them into 188 bins, there's going to be some bins that are very sparse. So as we'll look at an example of some of the results, but in that case, you need to look at maybe a pooled source of data to come up with a reasonable estimate. If you're looking at a particular combination that has little or no data. And of that 437, it's a bit deceptive because a large portion of those are safety relief valve records. We get a lot of those just because of the nature of how we test those valves. And so the actual population of CCF events is rather limited. So this is an example of the kinds of information that you'll find in that report. This is motor-driven pumps, and at the beginning of each section, we provide the pooled data. So this is all motor-driven pumps, and we provide alpha factor distributions and also multiple Greek letter parameter estimates, if that's your thing, you can use those as well. And then under each of the generic data, then, will be system-specific information, and you can use those parameter estimates in your PRA calculations. So having access to this data, we provide several methods apart from the reports. So we do maintain a website called NROD, or the NRC Reactor Operating Experience Database. There's a web link here that you can get to it. This is provided for NRC staff, INL staff, and any IMPO member. It does contain proprietary data, and that's why we do have to restrict it to IMPO members. If you're a PRA consultant working for IMPO utility, you can also request access, and we'll check with the IMPO utility member sponsor and validate your access, and you can get in that way. Currently, there are about 100 registered users of this system. So using this system, you can see the events that were coded, how we coded them, and how they go into the database. There's also a link inside of NROD to our reliability and availability data system, or RADS, and that's a statistical tool that processes the data and creates the parameter estimates. I'll show you an example of what that looks like. So this is an example, again, of RADS. I know it's a bit of an eye chart, but within RADS, you can select your system components, failure modes of interest. You can pick what plant types you want. You can look at the individual events and take some of them out if you'd like. We do create and save the rules that were used for the parameter estimate report inside of RADS. So if you want to rerun the same calculations that you see the results in the report, you can do that. Or you can take the rules and modify them for whatever particular interesting study you're doing, changing the date range, for example, seeing how maybe the estimates would have changed over time. Now, if you don't have access to NROD, there are publicly available reports that are available at that web link there. So I did show already the example of the CCF parameter estimate report. Our overall parameter estimates are also reported on the website, as well as various insight studies related to components, systems, loss of offsite power, initiating events. And we also provide on there some operating time information that you could use for denominators in various studies. So a new area of research is the causal alpha factor model. So there was various issues brought up or various concerns with the alpha factor model that is currently used in the NRC. So in 2014, the NRC and INL conducted a feasibility study to look at an alternative method. Some of the issues with the alpha factor model were that it does not incorporate causes of component failures explicitly. And the problem would be that we acknowledge that there are other causes included in the probabilities that do not affect the component that fails. This is primarily if you're looking at an event assessment or something like that. So the causal alpha factor model is meant to be able to exclude maybe some of these the events from the database that wouldn't affect the failure that was observed. So this is still undergoing. There are parameter variables already calculated to support the causal alpha factor model, and those will be continued to be updated in the NROD database. The cause groups that were initially included are component, design, environment, human, and other. So, in conclusion, I know I went a little fast. It seemed slower in my head when I was going through this. We are collecting and maintaining operating experience data at Idaho National Lab on behalf of the NRC. We have various ways to access that data. So on the NRC's public website, we publish the parameter estimate results. We also have the NROD operating experience database, where if you are an IMPO member or an NRC member, you can get access to that and perform your own calculations. And if you need help with that, you can give us a call and we can talk you through how to use those tools. Some of those tools were created to support various studies, and those are maintained to replicate the results of the reports that we provide. And then finally, we are continuing to improve the realistic modeling of common cause failure, specifically now through the causal alpha factor research that is going on. And I think there'll be some more mention of that, more mention of the methods and modeling techniques in the next couple of lessons. So that concludes the first presentation on CCF.
Thank you, Sean. This is the last session of the afternoon, so I don't think nobody's really gonna have any issues with maybe leaving a little bit early, right? So, especially my wife. So the next presenter is gonna be Mr. Jeffrey Mittman. He is a senior reliability and risk analyst at the U.S. as the U.S. NRC Office of Nuclear Reactor Regulation. Mr. Mittman conducts risk evaluations of at power and shutdown events and conditions, flooding, and spent fuel pool risk issues. He has also contributed to the development of human reliability analyses and common cause failure methods, implementing procedures and PRA standards. Prior to his appointment at the NRC in 2003, he worked as a project manager for the Electric Power Research Institute with responsibilities for outage risk management, risk-informed in-service inspection, fire risk, spent fuel CAS PRA, and software development. Mr. Mittman will be presenting on common cause failure activities at the NRC. Please join me in welcoming Mr. Mittman.
Good afternoon. I'm also going to talk about common cause, and the focus of my presentation is common cause in the significance determination process and how it's used and some of the thinking that's going on in there. So it's very focused to the SDP. So a little duplicative with the previous presentation, a little bit about definitions and what we're going to be talking about. So common cause is two or more individual components. Component failures or degraded conditions that happen during a demand, during in-service in testing, or deficiencies that would have resulted in a failure if the demand signal had been received. So it's two failures of like components in one system. The component failures within a selected period of time, such as the PRA mission time, and the component failures must be within a single shared cause, has a single shared cause and coupling mechanism, and the component failures occur within an established component boundary. So what we're talking about here is, say, two RHR injection valves failing within a limited amount of time, two emergency diesel generators failing within a limited amount of time. We don't look at things like a failure of injection valve and high-pressure core spray and in low-pressure core spray. They're two different systems. We don't look for common cause there. So some background. There's lots of data on single failures. Typically, you know, if you're talking about an emergency diesel generators, we could see several hundred failures of that. Data collected it's typically collected within a 24-hour mission time window. Because it's so limited, there's very limited time window, and like components, there's very limited data, as we talked about earlier. Typically, the data points are from the same root cause. The data is very sparse because of this. It doesn't mean just because it's sparse data that it's not important. I was looking back through some old documents about PRA from the 1970s, and Common Cause was brought up all the way back then as being a very significant contributor. In general, the industry agrees with our approach to Common Cause, the approach that the NRC is using. It's required by the PRA standards, so there's a pretty broad consensus of the general approach that we're using. It becomes really important, though, when we in the framework of the significance determination process, you know, mostly when you're looking at average core damage models, we're looking at the contribution to core damage over a year. Well, in the SDP process, we have a single failure. So if you have a failure of a diesel generator because of a performance deficiency, and you're trying to explore what the risk levels were from that performance deficiency, and you have a failure, then you've got one failure, and now there's a lot of interest and a lot of emphasis on what's the probability of a second failure of a diesel or a like component within a very short period of time. And because you've had the first failure, the common cause contribution from a second failure pops up to the top, and it becomes very critical in those situations. And that's why there's so much interest in the SDP, because it can be a very large contributor to the overall risk levels within that performance deficiency. So we use the alpha factors methodology. There's a new reg that was published at the end of last year, new reg 2225, basis for treatment of potential common cause failures in the SDP process. It was September of last year, and I've given the ML number if you're interested in looking that up in Adams. A little bit more on definitions in or how we treat things. In the SDP process, when we have a failure, say a diesel generator, there's a performance deficiency and the diesel fails, we go into the PRA model and we set the basic event for that that component to true, which has a numerical value of 1. Now, in all the SDPs, you know, nobody's gone to core damage, so we know the core damage frequency is actually 0, or the core damage frequency from that event, they didn't go to core damage, the probability of core damage in the past was 0. But in the modeling of what could have happened, what we do is everything that succeeds, for instance, if we have the diesel generator alpha fails for diesel generator bravo, we don't set that to 0, even though it worked. What we do is we leave it at its basic event probability from the base model. So we don't set it to false, we don't set it to 0, we leave it at its nominal failure probability. So a little bit of a mapping, we have common causes, we show two components of motor operator valve, alpha and bravo. We have multiple causes that could impact both valves. And so in this particular case, we have an incorrect limit switch reading setting on the alpha valve. On the bravo valve, the setting is correct, but just because it's correct doesn't mean that there can't be the potential for common cause. So for the bravo valve, we'll leave it at its nominal value for a single probability, and then we'll propagate through the potential for common cause on the bravo valve, given the fact that we know that the alpha valve has already failed. So we've had multiple failures over the last several years where in SDPs where common cause has been a rather significant contributor. There was a diesel generator coupling problem at the Hatch plant back in 2009. Oyster Creek had problems with electromatic relief valves in 2014. Dresden had a problem with the MRVs also in 2014. Pilgrim had a problem with safety relief valves in 2015. And Oyster Creek had a problem again with EMRVs in 2016. So these are examples where common cause has been a rather significant contributor to to the SDP findings, and that's why the Common Cause draws a lot of attention in the SDP world. So the industry has proposed some different approaches to dealing with Common Cause in the SDP world. XLEN wrote a letter to the NRC back in 2017 talking about the issue and concerns with how we're approaching it. As I said earlier, the industry doesn't challenge the basic methodology that we're using. It's more a concern about how we're applying it to the SDP world. Currently, NEI has proposed several areas of improvement, and those areas that we're focusing most on are to perform, since the NRC should be performing sensitivity analysis to determine whether common cause is a major driver in each particular SDP. And they are also recommending that we look at licensee defensive strategies to prevent common cause. The industry spends a lot of time. They're well aware of the issue of common cause, and so there are lots of mechanisms that they've imposed over the years to try and prevent multiple failures of like components. There's been a lot of significant interaction between the NRC and the industry since about 2017, and so what are we going to do going forward? It's a memo that we've written internally. It's available publicly. And what we're planning to do during the next year is a one-year trial period. We're going to go ahead and when we have SDPs that involve common cause, we're going to do some sensitivity analysis, varying the alpha factor parameters that go into it, make sure we understand how the common cause failures affect the CDF colors and CDF values. And we're also going to allow licensees to demonstrate the common cause defensive strategies that they're using that they think illustrate, justify why the common cause impact should be less than what the models are presenting. I want to emphasize here, though, that the burden is on the licensees to come forward with their defenses of, and why they think the common cause values we're using are too conservative. In parallel with that, the NRC will or the NRR is going to implement a user need request with the Office of Research, and we're going to look at a little bit of causal alpha factor methodology that was talked about by Sean a little bit earlier. A potential complication from that is that right now, because we're using one alpha factor across the common cause factor group, where we average in all the causal factors, if we start to split that out, sometimes, probably most of the time, the individual causal factors could go down, which would decrease the impact of common cause on the SDP. But the flip side of that is the average, so there's some causal factors that will have a larger impact. So if a licensee happens to trigger a cause for a common cause failure for one of those larger impact causes, then the common cause contribution from that will go up. So it's a two-edged sword. You'd expect most of the contributions to go down, but every once in a while there's a possibility for an increased common cause contribution. So when the trial period's up, NRR will consider insights gained from the trial, and we'll look at updating our RASP handbook to see what improvements we can do. And the last slide is simply a bibliography of some of the more relevant new reg reports that are available on the issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. So the next speaker is going to be Mr. Greg Krueger. Mr. Krueger is currently serving as a lone Exelon employee to the Nuclear Energy Institute. He is serving as a senior technical advisor to support industry risk informed initiatives. Greg is also serving as the Boiling Water Reactors Owners Group Vice Chairman. Prior to his appointment to the Nuclear Energy Institute, Greg served as the Director of Risk Management at Exelon Generation for 8 years. In this position, he was responsible for the development of probabilistic risk assessment models and implementation of risk-informed processes and applications for the 23 Exelon nuclear units. Greg holds a bachelor's degree in nuclear engineering from University of Wisconsin, a master's degree in mechanical engineering from Drexel University. He also holds a senior reactor operator certification from Limerick Generating Station. His presentation is titled Common Cause Failure Considerations in the Context of Risk-Informed Decision-Making. Please join me in welcoming Mr. Krueger.
Thanks, Felix. Jeff gave a great framework discussion of common cause in the SDP. I'm going to further that discussion, but change the flavor of it and talk about risk in the context of risk-informed decision-making. Some might say that's the current buzzword in the regulatory arena these days, to use risk to inform decisions, and I'll get into some of the details with regard to that. But first, you know, what is risk-informed decision-making? I know there's a session on Thursday morning, but it's a philosophy whereby risk insights are considered together with other factors to establish requirements that better focus licensee and regulatory attention on design and operational issues commensurate with their importance to health and safety. That definition comes from an SRM on SECI 98144. So 21 years ago, that definition was put in place by the NRC. I think the regulatory oversight process is an example of a framework, a risk-informed framework, that certainly serves that goal. And we can certainly move that ball a lot further forward in using some of the information we have today. And I'm going to approach that from that perspective. One of the other aspects here is that you know, when we talk about numbers, and Sean gave a great example of there's 188 bins with 400 and some common cause events, which means it's rather rare. And so we're applying numbers to try to make a characterization of a performance deficiency, which has some uncertainty, a large uncertainty in it. I believe it's much more useful to look at the quantitative and qualitative factors that play into this to determine what the outcome is in SDP that involves common cause. The focus on the numerical results really is some of the heart of the issue with regard to SDPs, as many well know. But risk-informed decision-making really demands looking at some of the programmatic aspects as well as the quantitative aspects. And that's where the industry paper that Jeff talked about comes from. I think our quantitative focus, particularly in the SDP framework, where we're trying to calculate minute numbers, really is creating an opposite effect with regard to risk-informed decision-making. We're putting more and more resources in trying to refine the numbers around this threshold than we are stepping back and saying, the risk is low. We're proving it's low. Demonstrating if it's 9-7, 3-6 is an exercise that at some point has diminishing returns, and therefore qualitative factors must come into play when looking at some of these issues. So again, I think the insights that come from the application of common cause and what we can do with it in context with these defensive measures that Jeff mentioned both play a significant role in determining what the final outcome of an SDP is. Something used a slide that was developed at NEI by Doug True, the current chief nuclear officer at NEI. But we look at today's industry. We look at 90% capacity factors for two decades now. From a safety perspective, many of you have seen the graph that shows core damage frequency from 1992 to today dropping by a factor of 10. Much of that comes from plant design and operational changes, as well as the application of the maintenance rule and risk management techniques that didn't exist 20 years ago. Top performing in terms of excellence as measured by IMPO. From an oversight perspective, when you go into the reactor oversight process and look at all the matrices there, high performance as measured there, and a margin study was done by EPRI last year that looked at where the nuclear plants lie relative to NRC safety goals and concluded that there is significant margin to those safety goals. So what does this all mean? This doesn't play into the actual calculation. But what it does say is the industry is in a different place today than it was 20 years ago. And as you can well imagine, when talking about the sparsity of data and looking at today's performance and looking at the time frame in which that data was collected, data is backwards looking. And the context in for risk-informed decision-making is one in which we're looking at the performance deficiency today, with the constraints and the programmatic requirements that are in place today at utilities, using data that is somewhat sparse and maybe not reflective of the current operational philosophies at nuclear stations. So there's where the qualitative aspect comes in. This is not just the quantitative calculation of common cause. Some recent information from the PWR Owners Group was developed and a report issued last year. Again, as Sean mentioned, this information is proprietary. But there was a look back at some of the data, some specifics, not as all-encompassing as what INL does, but certainly for motor-driven pumps and emergency diesel generators, when breaking up the periods, rather than looking at a 20-year period, look at two different 10-year periods and look at the change or the rate of change of failures and common cause that's occurring over that time. Much more reflective of the direction the industry has headed in the recent past. And so, again, there's data being collected by the industry trying to determine, you know, is the current information being used to assess an SDP risk significance as aligned to the actual performance that nuclear plants see today. So the industry white paper, as Jeff outlined, really has two recommendations. And the first is really to perform sensitivities. There is a new reg that has the basis for how to calculate common cause within the SDP process. That is not being challenged. Again, in the context of risk-informed decision-making, you know, looking at one methodology versus another is really focusing on the numbers rather than stepping back and looking at the context of common cause in a more holistic perspective. But the first was to perform sensitivity studies. Given the sparsity of the data, you know, how much variability in the answer do we get when we quantify these small numbers? And does it really change the conclusions or not? That's a fairly simple activity to undertake. And the second, Jeff mentioned the Risk Assessment of Operational Events Handbook, the RASP handbook. There is a ground rule in that RASP handbook for the SERP panel, which is a panel of directors within the NRC that this discussion takes place with. But there is opportunity within that ground rule to take qualitative factors, take the quantitative measures that are being used by the SPAR models and the calculation, and marry that up with some of these other qualitative aspects of operation and defenses that utilities bring to bear. So the focus of the white paper is to suggest those methods for illustrating how the common cause really impacts the decision-making process. And again, as I said, it is not intended to change the quantitative method used today within the SDP, but rather have a framework for consideration. What does this do when we put this into perspective? By characterizing the defenses, it really takes the conversation to the next level. What I've observed, and as Felix had indicated, a number of those common cause SDPs I had been personally involved in, so I feel the pain of the calculations. But the focus tends to be on the numbers and looking at very small details associated with that, rather than stepping back and looking at the qualitative aspects. And I think we can improve the process by blending those two and really using a risk-informed decision-making framework to address common cause within SDPs. Certainly, it would improve the characterization of the performance deficiency. What really was key in terms of the performance deficiency as it relates to common cause or defenses? What were the organizational deficiencies or defenses there? How can we optimize this and provide some perspective? And promoting good practices. You know, the utilities have access to the RASP handbook. There's clearly a great outline of how the calculation is going to be done. We all know how the calculation is going to proceed, and we understand what really are the triggers that can change the results. So by listing these qualitative factors in the RASP handbook, it provides an outline for utilities. It's not just a handbook for the NRC to use, but it will inform the utilities on where defenses might be most appropriate to limit common cause. There are some coupling factors, and we can get into details of common cause, but where does it come from? It's really, there's five major aspects, and they come from the quality, the design, maintenance, operation, and environmental factors that can all contribute. In many cases with a performance deficiency that involves common cause, it really comes from maintenance issues or operational issues. The design or environmental issues are the same. Yet those are all buried in this calculational number, this number that's used, and perhaps breaking those out and then understanding what the defensive strategies are relative to those elements is crucially important to moving forward to even bettering the operational and the equipment failure rate at nuclear stations. So what do we do? There's a table we had put together called the strength of defenses that could be inserted into the RASP handbook. And you might ask yourself, well, where do these generalizations of the strength of defenses come from? You know, complete, superior, moderate, and weak. That comes from the very new reg, 6268, that Sean had mentioned. In that new reg, in developing the database associated with common cause, there's not only the information that comes in, as he stated, from the EPIX database and other sources, but there is a section that talks about qualitative factors. So even in assembling the data, there's a recognition that there's a use for qualitative factors. What we did was marry the method that was used for assembling the data. We were basically saying that same method can be used on the back end in the context of our performance deficiency, and marry those two. So those categories, those strength of defenses, are no different than what's used in the new reg for assembling the data. And that's where I believe there's a beauty in the alignment here, and it allows then utilities to understand what weak, moderate, and superior defenses might be. I mean, this framework does not currently exist, and believe that if that was incorporated into the RASP handbook, it certainly would provide much more guidance to utilities. And I'll just hold up this book. There's an IMPO guidance document called Principles for Excellence in Integrated Risk Management. It's IMPO 15 TAC 011. And one of the principles is that risk is eliminated or minimized through preemptive actions based on well-defined understanding of event significance and consequence. Residual risk is mitigated to acceptable levels using compensatory measures. That's a fundamental principle that exists before performance deficiency might manifest itself. And therefore, that's why I'm so enamored with the use of qualitative factors in concert with the quantitative process. And second, one of the elements here in this booklet for excellence basically states degrading plant systems or enterprise conditions that affect risk are promptly identified, communicated, and addressed with urgency commensurate with potential or actual consequences. Common cause implications are considered in risk determinations. So we have operational guidance independent of the regulatory structure that basically drives utilities to look at extent of condition. The first thing that happens when something fails is, what is the extent of condition? Does it affect other similar equipment? And there's root cause, apparent cause that go back. And I'll tell you that there is a sense of urgency, because what does common cause do? It cuts across all of the redundancy you have in the plant. There's a recognition that you want to limit or eliminate common cause potential. And I think marrying those principles up today and how we operate today with the data that might be somewhat not reflective of today's principles is important in an SDP determination. So again, I already mentioned this, the combined impact of improved data. We've got some improved data, improved operational data, some defenses or understanding of defenses, and what can cause influence a reduction in common cause factors is important. And that really blends itself nicely into what I would consider a risk-informed decision-making approach or framework for SDPs. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. So now we're going to make a change a little bit of topic, getting away from the common cause failure and getting a little bit into data and human reliability analysis. With that, we're going to have Dr. James Chang. He has more than 20 years of experience in human reliability analysis research. He led the team to develop the NRC scenario authoring characterization and debriefing application software, Cicada software, to collect operator simulator training data to estimate human error probabilities. Since 2012, the Cicada software has been used by United States and international nuclear power plants and research institutes to collect operator performance information in simulator training and experiments. Dr. Chang will present NRC's analysis of the Cicada data to estimate human error probabilities. So, with that, please join me in welcoming Dr. Chang.
How do I control? Okay, thank you. I'll talk about another topic. We call it cross-cutting issue instead of common cause. That's about human performance. My topic today is the NRC's Cicada software. The software was developed through a partnership between the NRC and the STP, specifically the NRC's Department Office of Research and the STP's Department of Operation and Training. That when we developed we have two objectives. One is to achieve, to facilitate and improve operator training. The second is to provide the empirical data to inform human reliability analysis in the estimate of human error probabilities. My talk today will talk about what's a Cicada, how to achieve these two objectives, and talk about the STP's user's experience and the NRC's current activity in analyzing the Cicada data for estimated human error probability. And we're also developing a major expansion and revision that we call Cicada 2 software. Finally, that I could conclude with the NRC's proposal that we're interested in looking for more domestic and international power plant to join the partnership. That's I'll talk about it, this. So the Cicada software is a tool that for the use in the nuclear power plant simulator training, that for the instructor will be using this software to develop simulation scenario and then using this tool to guide them to do the debriefing. that in developing this tool, we developed the very focused on that the its usability to help improve operator training so that we get the inputs from the SDP's instructor. We put in a function to facilitate the training. For example, like we put if the crew performance in the simulator training had reached trigger a certain rule that it automatic email the uptrain manager or and training manager about the crew performance. So this will increase that the management's awareness and engagement in the crew performance. It's a standalone software that we particularly that define this software. It's not interact with the simulator. That's, so there's no way to affect the simulator behavior. And it also is a database that helping the HI in the HP estimate. This is showing that an example of the simulation scenario that's given the one initial condition in instructor will inject the malfunction or condition for crew to respond. In this simulation design that for each malfunction that the instructor will identify what, given this malfunction, what's the training objective they want to observe. These are the training objectives that the instructor evaluate crew performance. Scalar here that require that instructor explicitly identify this training objective element and then who won this training objective element and what's the importance. We use a four-level color code to indicate the importance. And this is an implementation of that scenario into the SCADA software. The first thing I will talk about is how SCADA to improve the operator training and estimate the human error probability. This is to achieve these two objectives from the same pool of the human performance information, but because the objective is different, the way that the information availability and the way of information detail are different. Let's try to explain the differences. Let's say that four students taking the identical exam. Exams are identical. The crew, the students' performance could be quite different. That some students perform excellent well, that some students perform not so good. If we assume that 70 point is the threshold, that in this case we have 50% succeed the exam, 50% fail. For training department, would be interesting looking at this thing that will come once the student took exam and then that will pay more attention to the two students fail the exam and then to identify why they failed the exam and then that propose the remediation strategy. Hopefully that's next time they will do better. The HI is different. That HI doing this thing is from a predictive perspective. That before the student takes the exam, that based on what's the exam question, what's the understanding of this student's knowledge, training, etc., and then can desire to reliably predict that. Well, in this case, that there's a 50% of students will succeed or fail the exams. So here, that we are talking about two set of different information that's implemented in the SCADA. For each training objective element, there was two portions of information. One is from a predictive analysis, we call it a context. This is through the context information. So that what type of activity is the operator doing and what's the situation then. And then the second portion of the information was retrospective. Once crew finished the simulation, that's how good the crew perform this training objective element, and then what's the contributor, etc. In order to use this, the context information that we develop methodology is we call it a human central system neutral technology. It's looking at from the human cognitive element that the task doesn't matter what you do is what's detecting information. For example, detecting an alarm. Or the diagnosis to understanding the situation and then make a decision. For example, like switching to the right procedure or that manipulation, doing an action. So this thing gives us the general framework from a human performance perspective, able to cope multiple different systems, different plans. From the debriefing portion here that we implement the four level. One is a performative disposition that the first level is excellent. We call it a set plus. That the second is satisfactory. That set that crew performance meet a requirement. Third level was a set delta. That means that the performance is satisfactory, but there's something that can be improved. And the other is unset, simply that performance is not acceptable. For the crew performance, specific crew performance here, that nuclear power plant has a strong desire, able to link the crew performance to impulse taxonomy. So yeah, what we do is implement the impulse taxonomy here, that so the crew can take credit to impulse. Like here, that's impulse five operator fundamentals. And then we are also in the process implementing the impulse leadership and the proficiency, these two taxonomy into the software, so that the plan, when they do the problem evaluation, able to pinpoint to this thing associated to which impulse taxonomy. Yeah, in addition that we also have our own taxonomy, but I don't want to spend too much time on this slide. Once the information put in there, one importance is that what the information getting out. That's in this slide that Cicada provided multiple, able to generate multiple results to support different information need. This one just one of the example outputs that once the information there is coming up, come to the end that there's provide a statistic of the crew performance that in the main function and the train objective element, you know that how many crew run through that this main function and train objective and how many set plus, set deltas unset. This provide a very easy table for the manager to identify where's their training resource need to be put in. And then we emphasize that for plan benefit, we say general report that they can simply copy and paste into their crew notebook to reduce their workload. That's the last thing we are doing think about the plan size. So mentioned about the SCADA 2, the motivation that in the past few years, we also outreach to the nuclear power plant for them to engage them to use the SCADA, and we got two major feedback. The first thing is that nuclear power want to have one single space put to have all the operator performance information. So this information, not only the simulated training information, but the job performance measure, written test, and the actual events. That's the first feedback. And the second feedback, that one is they want to be able, from through the data they collected, able to track individual operator performance. These two that we are not implement in SCADA 1, so that will come into the motivation that my manager agreed that we'll pursue this direction so that we are developing the SCADA 2 to expand the capacity, scope and capacity. And SCADA 2, in the same time, that we also fix the things like the IT requirement of the software, this thing that so it's much not only user-friendly, but also that much economically feasible for plan to use. STP has been used in the software from the 2012. In general, the feedback users experience is very positive. The two major things that they found that using the SCADA's guided debriefing, they found the crew debriefing is much more engaged, and then that can really focus on the discussion of their performance. And the second is the SULA function that we put in there, that the management, it's more getting that more in time, that promptly get the crew performance information, so that engage that more engaged in the crew performance monitoring and supervision. Let's talk about the HRI side. 3 years ago, NRC that we have some data. We think that that's ready to explore the data. How use the data to inform the error, human error probability estimate. And 3 years ago, that we give contract to three contractors to perform propose the method to analyze the data we have at that time. That's coming to the Bayesian belief net and the statistical significance type of method. That was a good. So that result was presented in the HRI data workshop last year in NRC headquarters and also at the PSUM 14 conference in California. And this year, that's Thursday and Friday, that we also has another HRI data workshop here. That part of this HRI data workshop, two of my colleagues, they were presented using the Cicada data to assess these performance shaping factors impact on HEP. So that that you are welcome to come to the to attend this workshop. NRC has welcomed this industry participation in this data. The more data we got, the more better that statistic indication we will have for HRI. Currently, that U.S. side that we have a nuclear plant or STP been using the Cicada 2012, and Vogtle 3 and 4 that just. January this year that started piloting the Cicada 2. The NRC partners principle is that NRC provide free software license training and technical support. And in exchange is that the plan that will give the NRC data to perform an analysis for HRI purpose. Yeah, so that if you're interested in that, this is contact information. That concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, James. So if anyone wants to get access to or do a partnership with the NRC, they can contact any of the two names in this last slide. Yeah. Thank you. So now we're going to go to the questions and answers portion of the session. I'm going to start with a question here that I think applies probably to Greg and Jeff. There's a two-part question. Given the scarcity of CCF data, how is uncertainty in CCF events handled in probabilistic risk assessments? And the second part, what type of uncertainty parameters are used for CCF events?
Go ahead. As far as uncertainty goes, to my recollection, uncertainty isn't used any differently with common cause than it is with any other basic event. So when we do an SDP, we do point estimates using our SPAR models, and then we have the capability of doing uncertainty analysis. And there are uncertainty parameters on all the basic events, including the common cause basic events. So that's just propagated through with a Monte Carlo analysis into the uncertainty analysis that's done around the point estimate. What's the second part of that question, Felix?
The second part is what type of uncertainty parameters are used for CCF events?
I'm going to have to pass on that. I don't recollect offhand what the parameters are.
Okay. Yeah, so whoever did that question, if they want to get back to me, I can get you an answer for that after the session. Let's see. So here's another question to Greg Krueger. If you have the improved data, how do you see the difficulty of recent...
safety based on them?
I'll read that again. If you have the improved data, how do you use the difficulty of reason the improved safety based on them? That makes sense, right?
I'll go back in the context of what I was trying to say is that the risk-informed decision-making approach is really a blending. What I've observed, firsthand is that as we continue to focus on the numbers, we continue to expend a lot of resources on those numbers And I think it's important to take the qualitative aspects, the operational aspects, and blend those into the decision that's trying to be made. So, you know, I have found or observed through time since 2000 at the beginning of the ROP, is we've tended to gravitate, because we've got models and we can do calculations, and we do them, and we seem to put more emphasis on the number, even though there's a inherent paucity of data, than we do some of the qualitative aspects because they're harder to pin down. But I think, you know, I think blending what we know today and how we operate today with some of the quantitative information is really the key to getting to the right decision with regard to the safety significance.
And I'd like to second that. You know, the ROP is intended to be risk-informed, not risk-based. As with almost everything that the NRC does and how it uses risk, you know, we intend to be risk-informed, not risk-based. And that means blending in qualitative aspects of risk and defense in depth and other things. And a lot of times the process tends to veer too much, in my opinion, off onto the number and only looking at the number and missing those other inputs that are significant. And it worries me sometimes that we're gravitating too much towards the number.
Thank you. So this question goes to Sean and any other who wants to jump in. How do you expect recent industry initiatives, Maintenance Rule 2.0 or MSPI elimination, to impact data collection efforts?
I think for most of the safety important systems, those will still be reported. And so there may be a slight reduction in the number of less important systems that are put in there. But what we've seen so far is plants report more than is necessary already because it supports their system engineering, health reports and things. So I don't expect it to be a major impact.
Thank you, Sean. Another question for you. Are the common cause screening criteria that you use consistent with NRC and industry?
Yes. So the screening criteria are a little broader than the actual CCF definitions so that we don't miss anything. So when we're screening events for potential CCF, we throw a little wider net, especially around the time range. When it comes time to do the reports, then those events are more scrutinized as to whether they would really be counted as a CCF event in a PRA. We also, before we're ready to publish the reports, use the PWR owners group as a second check on all of our CCF events. So it's not just the INL, and it's also reviewed by the NRC. So all three groups have looked at it before the reports are published.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else wants to expand? Okay. So this one goes to Jeff Mittman. Have you studied the common cause for Fukushima diesel generator failure?
So the at Fukushima Daiichi, all but one of the diesel generators on site failed, but they didn't fail from problems with the diesels per se. They failed from the tsunami that damaged the diesels along with a lot of other equipment. So there is, in a sense, a common cause event. That's the tsunami that did damage to the equipment. But it's really not the focus where we're incorporating into the models today, where we're looking for common cause from things like maintenance or testing or design changes that were done on it.
Thank you, Jeff. So this question goes to any of the panelists. How is the industry adopting 5069 going to capture individual component failures data for non-safety commercial components? Will it be in IMPO or ISIS? I can repeat the question.
I think it's related to the question about Maintenance Rule 2.0 or eliminating MSPI. I think it all falls under the same boat. Even though that there may be a less requirement to report, I think plants are still going to track these systems, and ISIS is where they will do it. So I think we'll still see it, but we'll monitor and see if there's a drop.
I would agree with Sean. I mean, one of the real benefits of a common database like that is to share the OE to the other plants. And so although there may be a regulatory need to share specific systems or component failures, there is equally a greater need to share those that aren't necessarily within the regulatory framework to make sure we understand and keep the capacity factors and the numbers that I showed on that slide high. So I would agree that it's probably much broader and will maintain itself.
Yeah, if I could add to that, in the PRA, there are lots of basic event probabilities and frequencies. And with the exception of, say, the loop frequencies, almost everything in the PRA comes out of the ISIS database. So the basic events for not only common cause, but for just failure to run, failure to start, failure to open, failure to close, all that information, almost all of it, comes from ISIS and the LERs. And so that's a critical input into the PRAs. And, you know, both the NRC and the industry want to use risk-informed moving forward. So it's really important that we maintain a good database of current information on failures so that we can have the best available information for the PRAs.
Thank you. So this question goes to James Chang. Will data collected by Cicada support the current suite of HRA approaches or some future approach like IDEAS?
Like what?
I'll repeat. Will data collected by Cicada support the current suite of HRA approaches or some future approaches like IDEAS?
I think both. The existing HRA method and the including the method that NRC is developing.
Yes. Thank you. Let's see, we got two more questions here. So this one for Greg. So it relates to recommendation one shown on one of the slides. Of what use is sensitivity calculations resulting likely in small numbers with large uncertainty?
Well, the sensitivities really provide a picture of the result using a span of common cause. Although the data might be sparse, what a sensitivity will do is provide an understanding of how much influence the common cause factor itself is having in the outcome or the quantitative result associated with an SDP. So, it's not there to calculate absolute risk. It's there to provide a risk insight is what I'll say. And that insight would allow you to understand if the span and how common cause changes really could land you in a green band in SDP or a white band or even a yellow band. It gives you that measure. So I'll call it a quantification that gives you a qualitative sense of the impact of common cause. And that's why I think performing sensitivity is an important piece of information.
Thank you. And the last question that I have here, unless someone else wants to go to one of the microphones, these to all panelists, these are basically your thoughts on digital INC. So the question reads like this. CCEF is currently a significant topic in digital INC. How are digital INC related CCEF addressed in the general databases for common cause failure? It seems that any software error should have been considered to be a CCF, whether observed as such or not, since all redundant channels would have the same software. So I guess there's two parts of the question there.
So I'll try and take a stab at that. I don't think that software common cause failures are represented in the data that we currently have. The data that we currently have is all hardware related. There's very little, as you know, there's very little digital equipment in the current fleet. So while common cause sounds like a pretty important issue in software and digital INC, the data that we have, I don't know how useful it'll be in helping to explore or understand that.
That's true. I agree with Jeff that it's not really collected at the moment. However, there are digital systems on the balance of plant side of nuclear plants, digital feedwater controllers. There is equipment and software that have been in place for 10, 15, 20 years. We saw a market improvement in loss of feedwater events from the 80s to the 90s to today. I think in part because of digital equipment for feed water. So although that information is not collected in a traditional analytical sense, I think there's anecdotal evidence that, in fact, in those cases, that digital is certainly helping drive the direction of feed water transients and events to a lower state than they were in the past.
Thank you. So with that, I think we've concluded our session, unless there's any other question. So one last round of applause to our speakers here.